Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, as U.S. voters prepare to head to the polls for Super Tuesday, why the uncommitted vote matters and what it means for President Biden.
Uncommitted, uncommitted.
We are voting uncommitted.
This is a clear warning to the Democratic Party that unless they do change course, they're in trouble in November.
I'm Malika Bilal, and this is The Take. As the U.S. presidential primary season hits its peak, a growing number of people unhappy with President Joe Biden's policy on Gaza are looking for ways to express their displeasure. It looks different on different state ballots: uncommitted, no preference, or a write-in vote for a ceasefire. But one thing remains the same. They want to send a message to the president that he's losing their faith and potentially their vote in November.
I am voting no preference in the Democratic primary.
I'll be voting no preference in North Carolina's Democratic primary.
I can't vote for Joe Biden in good conscience while he enables and funds the destruction of Gaza.
They're taking their cue from a state that's already voted. The Listen to Michigan campaign got more than 100,000 people in the swing state to vote uncommitted. So I heard from one of the campaign's most high-profile backers, former Michigan Congressman Andy Levin. You could introduce him in a lot of different ways, depending on when you were to meet him.
I am a serial social entrepreneur making trouble since I was in college, like 40 years ago.
Back then, he had a very different plan for his life, but the family industry came calling.
My dad had been in the House of Representatives, my uncle in the U.S. Senate. They're the two longest-serving siblings in the 234-year history of the U.S. Congress.
He followed suit, first working in the state government in Michigan, where he was born and raised.
Helping people who are unemployed or underemployed get new skills. I've been involved in climate change and environmental campaigns for many years. You know, I wasn't a politician from a young age. I was more of an organizer. But then when Trump got elected and my dad was in his 80s, I said, I'm going to run for his seat. He retired. And I served for the last 4 years until a year ago in the U.S. House of Representatives.
And he has some accolades.
I think I have the most arrests of any member of Congress after our beloved Mr. Lewis passed away. You know, I thought Barbara Lee would have more arrests than me, but no, I've been around.
Those progressive credentials made him a target of some dark money campaigns back in 2022 when he was running for re-election.
AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, is spending millions of dollars in primary races to defeat progressive Democrats. AIPAC has spent over $3 million targeting Andy Levin.
As he tells it, the election was complicated by several things, including changing congressional maps. AIPAC's money was just one factor, but it was a factor.
Yeah, I'm a Jewish white guy from Michigan, but besides me, AIPAC seems to be going after overwhelmingly people of color and women of color in particular. And it hurts the Democratic Party so much for them to distort things and prevent progressives from winning in progressive districts because of their obsession with supporting the Israeli government no matter what they do.
He lost his seat.
Progressive Democratic Congressman Andy Levin has lost to more moderate Democratic Congresswoman Haley Stevens in the state's 11th district.
So I'm just a former congressman who's now having really good time, actually.
And lately, that includes fending off calls to run for president. We'll get to that later. And backing the Listen to Michigan campaign.
A campaign called Listen to Michigan wants Democrats to skip over any candidate on the presidential primary ballot and bubble in uncommitted.
Former Congressman Andy Levin, welcome to The Take. Let's talk about what Michigan delivered on Tuesday, February 27th, when more than 100,000 voters in the state's Democratic primary signaled that they are uncommitted in this presidential race. Now, those were votes to send delegates to the party's nominating convention. But how important could 100,000 votes in Michigan be in a race for president?
Well, let me tell you how I look at it. It was an historic night, really, in American democracy. From my point of view, Donald Trump is an existential threat to American democracy, to all immigrants, to all poor people, to working class people. He's virulently anti-union. He's against worker voice and power. So in order to prevent him from returning to the White House, we have to make sure that President Biden wins re-election. For President Biden to win re-election, he pretty much has to win Michigan.
You hear that adage that the road to the White House goes through Michigan, and that's why.
Totally. And so Donald Trump won it by just 10,700 votes in 2016. Joe Biden won it by 14 times as much in 2020, but still that was 154,000 votes. It's not that many. And we have so many people here who are so upset about the war in Gaza. Certainly that's centered in the Arab American community. We are the most densely Arab American state in the Union. We also have, beyond that, beautiful Muslim community that's not only Arab Americans. Like, we have 1.4 million African American citizens here. We have many hundreds of thousands of young voters who are upset. So if many of people from any of those categories stay home, the math just doesn't add up for Joe Biden on November 5th. So for me, I've been clear all along. I'm voting for Joe Biden on November 5th, no matter what, but I feel a bigger responsibility to help him win here. And I don't see how we do it unless he changes course on Gaza. It's not a political thing, Malika, right? This is a policy problem. And it wasn't my idea. I'm just a supporter of this, Malika. The young people, the people who organized this campaign have impressed me so much. They said, wow, we're really mad at the president. It would actually be tragic if people's reaction was, I'm just going to stay home. I'm not going to vote. And I admit here, Malika, I'm also happy to admit, or sad to admit in another way, that what I see as the political necessity for the president lines up with what I feel fervently he must do for the sake of justice, for the sake of human rights, for the, just to save lives of innocent people, that we have to have an immediate permanent ceasefire in this war in Gaza. We have to accept that there is no military solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict at all.
What was the moment for you that you realized Democrats are in trouble and that you needed to sound the alarm with this uncommitted campaign?
I mean, October 7th happened, right? And it was horrifying. I mean, to me, it was so violent and so shocking. And Hamas and other groups came over the border and just massacred people in their cars, in their houses, in their beds. There were war crimes committed, I feel sure about it. Afterwards, Israel said, the Netanyahu regime said, we're going to, you know, have this huge military operation. And American military leadership, our Secretary of Defense on down, said, what's your military plan here? Wiping out Hamas or eliminating Hamas from the face of the earth, that's not a military plan. And actually, Israel never developed a coherent military plan. And they went in with this huge force, and in their supposed objective of eliminating Hamas, they started killing innocent people in the hundreds and the thousands, and now over 30,000 people are dead. Some are combatants, but the vast majority are innocent people. Women and children being killed at the fastest clip of any conflict since World War II. Dropping 2,000-pound bombs on densely populated areas. And the U.S. says, we don't do that. We didn't do that in Iraq and Syria when we were going after ISIS. We haven't done that in decades. And we're supplying those bombs, Malika. We've sent 5,000 more 2,000-pound bombs to Israel since October. I mean, come on. So I personally am so upset about this. I'm upset about this as a Jewish person.
Yeah.
Who believes in the self-determination of my own people in the Holy Land. But I've known for my whole adult life that the only way for Jewish people to live in peace and security in Israel and Palestine is to realize the political and human rights of the Palestinian people too. So I was upset by October 7th and in the aftermath and the Israeli response. But it was really, I didn't know what to do. What does it matter what I do, right? I'm just a former congressman. I didn't know what to do. And then there was an exhibit about Nelson Mandela at an amazing history museum, American History Museum in Dearborn. And I went through this exhibit, and at the end, they talked about criticism of Mandela for making peace. People said, how can you make peace with de Klerk, you know, the president of South Africa at the time? How can you make peace with this Afrikaner majority that's been killing us and torturing us and having this apartheid system? And he said, well, you know, for the sake of our people, for our freedom to have self-determination for us, we're not going to become evil like them. We have to make peace with them. We have to have a country where they can live and we can live, and we'll have to live together. And I was so moved by that. And I came out of that exhibit. I sat on a bench and I just started crying. I was weeping. And I felt like we have failed Nelson Mandela. I was so involved in the anti-apartheid movement when I was in college. We demanded that the trustees of our college divest in stock in companies doing business in South Africa. I'm so proud to have been one little drop of water in the ocean of struggle to end apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't led by students in Massachusetts, you know. It was led by Black South Africans. But we were there doing our little tiny part, and I felt like, what am I doing to stop this carnage in Gaza? And then guess who was leading this struggle in here in Michigan? Guess who was coming up with this brilliant strategy? It was dear friends. It was young people in my life. It was like the spokesperson for the campaign, Abbas Alawiya, was somebody who I took to Washington. So I said, okay, let me pitch in here.
After the break, what Michigan's Democratic primary vote could mean for November's general election.
Welcome to Necessary Tomorrows. My name is Ursula. I am an AI, and I have inferred from your online activity that you have been feeling more dread than hope when you think about the future that is coming for us here in the 2060s. So I have created a course just for you to enhance your capacity for imagining different futures. Necessary Tomorrows, an audio series by Doha Debates and Al Jazeera. Find it where you listen to podcasts.
Biden will have to do more than Jesus Christ in terms of bringing people out of the dead, or else we will not vote for him. 30,000 people have been killed.
That's what Hali Harb, a senior producer for Al Jazeera, heard from an Arab American advocate in the Michigan city of Dearborn. Dearborn voted 57% for uncommitted last week. We asked him about whether this Listen to Michigan campaign could go beyond the party primaries and affect November's election.
For that school of thought, it's too late. That's it. Done. Biden lost those votes. But there's another section of those community that says, let's give him a chance to do the right thing. And they're not ruling out voting for him. Now, will the president change course for those communities? It remains to be seen.
Like the former congressman said, there is virtually no way for Joe Biden to win re-election without Michigan. But Hali told us his likely competitor, former U.S. President Donald Trump, is ahead in most polls in the state. And now, other swing states are taking notice. That includes the 16 states set to vote on Super Tuesday. We heard from a few people who were using the uncommitted or no preference options on their ballot to get their message across.
My name is Allie Madan. I'm one of the organizers of the Vote No Preference Massachusetts campaign. No preference is the Massachusetts equivalent of uncommitted. The goal is to send a clear message to the Biden administration that we, the voters of Massachusetts, disagree with their role in funding, arming, and otherwise supporting the Israeli genocide of Palestinians.
My name is Bessie Danmidek, and I am a 20-year-old college student at the University of Minnesota. This Super Tuesday, I'll be voting uncommitted because of Joe Biden's handling of the genocide that Israel is committing on Palestine.
My name is Cassie. I live in Durham, North Carolina. I early voted no preference in the Democratic primary for president. And of course, I was inspired by Michigan's efforts to vote uncommitted and felt that this is a good way to communicate my rage to the president. If Biden wants to remain in office, he'll need to change course.
And it goes beyond individual voters. In Washington state, which votes later this month, the largest labor union has also encouraged its members to vote uncommitted. Whether those campaigns change the political calculus for the Biden campaign is yet to be seen. But the large number of uncommitted votes last week is on their radar. On NPR on Wednesday, Biden campaign co-chair Mitch Landrieu contrasted the current president's policies with those of his predecessor.
We're going to continue to talk to them and then ask them to think about the choices and what the consequences are about electing somebody who wants to have a Muslim ban.
So there's a fine line that strategists like you are walking here, because you sense and see the unhappiness of voters and also know that when it comes to November, there's an existential threat to democracy.
Yes.
People are going to be blamed. Fingers are going to be pointed. Many of them will be pointed at Michigan. They're already being blamed. What do you make of that blame and how do you address it?
You know, Malika, I've been searching around for a proper analogy for this, and I haven't found one. But the problem with that thinking is, if I see a fire and I'm yelling, fire, fire, don't blame me for the fire. I'm trying to alert you to the fire. I didn't cause the fire. I didn't have a match on me. I didn't have a lighter. Those of us who see that the president can't win Michigan without changing course didn't create the fact that he can't win Michigan without changing course. We're just trying to tell him. And so I don't think we're training people to not vote for Joe Biden. That's kind of an insult to people's intelligence. It's an insult to really the idea of democracy. It's actually a beautiful thing for people who want to support someone to come out 8 months in advance of when it really matters and through their tears, get themselves to the ballot box and shake their fist at Joe Biden and say, Mr. President, I am so mad at you. I'm really mad. And I don't feel like I can vote for you unless you change course. So I think this is the best thing that could have happened for Joe Biden. And I hope he will change course.
You represented Michigan in Congress from 2019 to 2023. As you mentioned, you come from a long line of prominent Jewish, Democratic, political leaders. Your father served in Congress. Your uncle was a U.S. senator. It helps explain why there is a coalition that includes people who want you to run for president yourself. Tell me about the Draft Andy campaign and what it says about the state of the race for president.
Okay, you're going to make me crack up, Malika. I still can't talk about that without laughing. I'm just not someone who saw myself as running for president of the United States. But it is true. It was in December, really, early December, I guess. I started getting a bunch of calls. And you know how you don't answer phone calls from numbers you don't know because it's likely to be spam, right? Or whatever.
I do. Yes, exactly.
But one of these people left me a message, and they are the labor law professor at one of the great law schools. And I was like, well, I have to call this person back. So I did. And they said to me, well, no, I'm not calling you about like a law review article. We were all calling you because you need to run for president of the United States. And I started laughing then. It's like, but they were very impressive, Malika. The group was political professionals, very serious people and a wide range of people. And their point was that Gaza is such a huge problem for the president. He doesn't understand it. They didn't think I would win the nomination, I don't think, but they thought that if I ran, you know, early enough and I got votes, you know, I became the peace candidate, right? That it could make the president change.
So you're giving me a diplomatic answer, but would you do it?
No. Okay, Malika, I'm a passionate activist, but I'm, even though I didn't decide to go into politics in my 20s and 30s and 40s and most of my 50s, you know, I've been steeped in it since I was a child, right? And it was completely impractical. I mean, it was too late for me to even get on the ballot. But I think that what's really interesting here is that a lot of the people who were involved in the draft, Andy, little effort there that was brief, were involved in the Listen to Michigan campaign. And it's the same movement, Malika, for peace. It's the same movement. Just basically all we're really saying is, can we see Palestinians as full human beings? Just that. Can we just see? How could you let well over 10,000 children die if you really see Palestinians as full human beings? I think that we're just saying that. So I don't need to run for president, thank you, because, you know, we found other ways to organize. And having people vote uncommitted in Michigan was, you know, a really great way, I think, to channel that energy.
So, former Congressman Andy Levin, you know President Biden, and ultimately support him still. There are multiple more states voting on Tuesday that also have uncommitted on the ballot, including some pretty competitive ones. What is your message for Joe Biden going into Super Tuesday?
My message for the president is that I fervently want you to win re-election, and I'm going to do everything I can to make it happen. But I need you to see that there's a lot of 1968 in 2024, that the young people of this country are so upset, that our beautiful Arab American and Muslim communities are so upset. And you need to see this not as a political problem, but as a policy problem. And we need to change course on Gaza. And don't parse how many votes uncommitted is getting in a given state and measure it out. Realize that so many people are staying home and seething. And we need to see them. We need to reach them. We need them desperately on November 5th. And to get them to come out for you, we need to change course on Gaza. And not only that, when you change course on Gaza, you're going to make a place for yourself in history as a really great American peacemaker. And I need you personally to do that.
From your lips, let's see what happens. Thank you so much for joining us on The Take and for sharing your perspective. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Malika. It's so good to be with you.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Farinisa Campana and Sonia Bagat, with Tingin Auliai, Zainab Bezer, Sariyat Khalili, David Enders, Chloe K. Lee, Miranda Lin, Ashish Malhotra, Khalid Sultan, Amy Walters, and me, Malika Bilal. Alex Roldan is our sound designer. Alexandra Locke is The Take's executive producer, and Nay Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back.